This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean Podcast. Today, we begin a four-week exploration of the Mahamudra tradition of meditation, an ancient approach known for its remarkable simplicity and profundity. In this talk, Reggie discusses how Mahamudra can meet us in our modern lives. This talk was given at last year's Mahamudra for the Modern World retreat, held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado. This year's Mahamudra retreat with Reggie is scheduled for March 22nd to the 30th. For more information about this meditation intensive, visit dharmaocean.org.
This beautiful Buddha is from Thailand. And it came down through Caroline's family, from her parents, and it's on our main shrine at home. And it's very, very, very impactful to sit with this Buddha, and there's a sense of presence and a sense of peace and a sense of collected and a sense of depth. In Thailand, in the northeast of the country, in the mountains, the people who follow the Buddhist lineage live. And they're forest meditators. They live in the forest. So I thought, this works. When the Buddha himself meditated in the eastern part of India, he lived in the forest for many, many, many years. Far more years than the biographies tell us, which came a lot later. And he lived beneath trees and vegetation that sheltered him from the sun and from the wind and from the rain. And the jungle around him was very sweet and very soft at night, with animals roaming about and night birds, flowers that bloomed at night and sent a beautiful scent through the forest, a stream flowing nearby his tree. And so this is reminds us of what it's like to be in retreat, that we're sheltered, we're protected, and we're held, so that we can make our journey. Sometimes in the tradition of the forest meditators, of whom, you know, the Buddha was the first example, obviously, within Buddhism, but it's a tradition that comes all the way down, really, to us. You know, we are not a town and village people, fundamentally. In Buddhism, you have two different wings. You have the town and village monks and nuns who live near the towns and villages and big communities. And then you have the forest meditators. And the lineage that we hold is the forest people, the people who live in the forest, the people who live on the margins, the people who never feel at home in the midst of the conventional world. People who feel that their heart and their soul is elsewhere. The people who find ways to step out of the conventional way of thinking and conventional life. Even if they're in it, they find ways to step out. And meditation, of course, is the main way. Some of our lineage literally lived in caves their whole life. up in Tibet or in India, they lived in faraway places in the jungle. There's a very interesting tradition in Northeast Thailand that one thing about Northeast Thailand you hear is that there are tigers. That's where the tigers live, in the jungles. And that the tigers are eat people. And the villagers in Northeast Thailand are really quite obsessed and terrified about the tigers. Because periodically, you know, a village person is out walking alone and they're killed and eaten by tigers. And these tigers are very, very big. This is not even like generally the kind you see in the zoo. I mean, they're big. But the interesting thing is, to date, no forest meditator, and by the way, these people meditate mostly at night because the day is oppressively hot, even though they have shelter. They meditate at night alone in their little kuti, their little hut. And they will, you know, alternate walking and sitting at night by themselves, you know, for days and months and years. And no forest meditator has ever been attacked by a tiger. Isn't that interesting? So we are people of the forest. We are people who live beyond the pale. We are people who are on easy terms with the unseen world, with the subtlety of life, with all of the things that most people ignore because they don't feed us in any particular way. They don't feed the ego. So I love this Buddha and I love this floral arrangement because it reminds us that our lineage goes back to the time of the Buddha, which is where the Thai tradition comes from, directly from the forest tradition of the Buddha to these folks who live today in Northeast Thailand. That's our lineage. We're not into triumphalism. Do you know what triumphalism is? It's an attitude that certain religions have, and it is Tibetan Buddhism definitely has it, where you think your particular version of whatever the religion is the best, the highest, and everybody else is low. It's called triumphalism. It's a position that religions will stake out, and every religion has it. You know, you see it in Islam, you see it in Christianity, you see it in Judaism. And you see it in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism. And you see it a little bit in Theravada Buddhism, but that's not us. Our Sangha is the meditators. Our Sangha is the people, wherever they are and whoever they are, who work on themselves, who are willing to make the journey of facing themselves as they are and dismantling everything that gets between them and the experience of life. That's our Sangha. A Vajrayana teaching, which is the Dharma that has been very, very restricted in Tibet. I'm talking about real Vajrayana. I'm not talking about the public Vajrayana that you know, you pretty much can get anywhere. But the esoteric Vajrayana tradition, which is what comes down to us in Dharma Ocean, I do believe is the Dharma for the modern world. And Chogyam Trungpa felt that way, that the Vajrayana tradition, the teachings, the... you know, Vajrayana is not really about Buddhism. I think even from what Caroline said this morning, you may have picked that up. It's not about Buddhism. It's about human experience, and it's about the experience of freedom and the experience of love, that every person who has ever walked on this planet and ever will walk on this planet, that's their calling, freedom and love. And the Vajrayana tradition teaches us how to be free, and freedom teaches us how to love. in an unrestricted way. We have a challenge as human beings, all of us, wherever we live, whatever tradition or non-tradition that we follow. There is this capacity that we have developed as humans to separate from our experience into a realm of thinking that is disconnected from our experience. What many of you may know as the left brain capacity, which is unique to humans, at least at the level that we do it. Nowadays they talk about top-down experience, which is the cerebral cortex, the thinking control mechanism. We have this capacity, and what has happened for quite some time now is we as a species have developed the thinking capacity to such a high degree that we've actually created a world that you can live in and be successful in without actually ever having any direct human experience. It's a mental world. The world of cities, it's an expression of what people think. The cyber world, it's an expression of what people think. We live within a realm of thinking. And the challenge for us is that the connecting links between the direct and naked experience of human life, which occurs in our what's called subcortical regions, meaning our soma, that direct experience of life, which used to be connected with the left brain, isn't anymore for many, many people. And our challenge is not adding more thinking and more sophisticated analysis on top of what we've already got, but to dismantle not our thinking process, but the investment that we have in constantly thinking about things, pigeonholing them, judging them, criticizing them, labeling them, and then living based on our inventory of assumptions. We have to dismantle our investment in that whole process. People hear about Mahamudra and they think, well, let's just rest in the now. Let's just rest in the now. Come on, let's rest in the now. Why don't we just do it right now? The reason we don't do it right now is because we can't do it, as Caroline was saying this morning. In our current state of awareness, even the now has become another concept. And it's a new concept, and so it's selling big. But after a while, people get tired of that, and somebody else will come up with some other interesting, intriguing way of talking about something different, and then everybody will jump on that and buy tapes and books and CDs. I mean, it's been going on for a long time in Western culture. What we're talking about here is actually making an actual human journey and realizing how invested we are in our habitual way of doing things and being intelligent enough to realize maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's not that we don't have the right book or the right CD. Maybe the problem is that we're invested in the wrong thing. And so we have this interesting journey that's being offered to us called Mahamudra. And Mahamudra really, I think as far as spiritualities go, is quite unusual because most spirituality in the world requires so much separation from our lives to do it. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I have a tremendous love and deep, deep, deep respect for the indigenous traditions, and have studied, certain indigenous traditions, and been incredibly nourished by them. But I had an interesting conversation with Maladoma Somme, who I, quote regularly, with whom I have become very, very close. We don't, talk that much anymore, but, we love each other. It's a very deep connection. He's a West African spiritual teacher, and he's very gifted. If you ever had a chance to meet him and study with him, it'd be wonderful. And he leads you through the initiatory process that happens in his village in Burkina Faso. And one day I said to him, I'd like to go to Burkina Faso, I'm going to go and see this, on site. And he said, oh, this isn't what we do there. And I said, what do you mean? He said, what we do there is the elders stay up all night, they stay up for days playing around with these tin can contraptions that they've made out of old soup cans. And that's their way of getting in touch with the ancestors. And the rituals go on for days and days, and you're watching, you have no idea what they're doing. And plus, if you know how to read, they won't talk to you. And I said, why not? And he said, because when you learn how to read, according to them, because they're not literate, they don't read. When you learn how to read, you actually lose your capacity to meet the ancestors face to face. So they won't even talk to you. So what he's done is he has, he's translated. I mean, he will say it. I've taken what I found out in the village through the initiation, and I figured out a way to get people close to it. And that experience actually, you can't just go to Burkina Faso. It's not going to work out. You don't speak the language, and even if you do, they won't talk to you. Same South America, same elsewhere in Africa, same with the Aborigines in Australia. Whatever people may say, indigenous cultures presuppose so much connection with the place and so much lore and stories, and their psyches have been formed in intimacy with the sacredness of the land. I mean, I suppose theoretically you could do it, but it's not really an option. In terms of the high religions, we have a similar problem, that they're not really accessible. Even, Tibetan Buddhism, which is the one I was trained in, and I did all of the rituals and the liturgies and, 30 years of Yidam practice of different Yidams. What I'm finding two interesting things. One is, it's not relevant to modern people, actually. And most modern people can't relate to it. We have a very simple form. I mean, in other words, what I've done is provided that in our community, people can do their classical nundro and do Vajragini practice, and she's our lady, she's our Yidam. But we're not that big on ritual simply because most modern people can't relate to it. And then it just doesn't, it's not relevant. It doesn't connect. Mahamudra, however, is different. Mahamudra, amazingly enough, is a tradition that was taught way, 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 way back just on its own to lay people at the time of the Siddhas, between the 2nd and the 12th centuries of the Common Era in India, all over India, and in the mountains in Nepal, what is now Nepal, and so on. And that tradition presupposes one thing. You have this one requirement to do the Mahamudra tradition. Does anybody know what that requires? It's a very strict requirement. Do you know what it is? You have to be human. That's it. So more and more I'm feeling that this tradition, number one, should be offered to everybody, because karmically that's where we're at. And number two, it's accessible to everybody. And incredibly challenging, very, very demanding, but very simple. The only one thing is asked, you know, really in Mahamudra. You only have to make one offering. It's not money. It's not energy. It's yourself. You have to offer up yourself. You have to offer up all the things that you're most dearly hanging on to. It doesn't mean you leave your family, but the hanging on is the problem. It's the investment. It's the hanging on. It's the using aspects of our life to make ourselves feel better. When we do that, then we can't relate to our experience anymore, because our whole life becomes about shoring up our defenses. So the Mahamudra tradition offers us an opportunity to dismantle those defenses. And that's what we're going to be looking at in this program. One of the things that we need to take a look at is space. We think of space as being empty. Space means awareness. Awareness means space. There's no such thing as neutral space. Space is alive. Space is awareness. As far as the space in the known and the unknown universe goes, there is awareness. And shockingly enough, it's our awareness, so to speak. And we need to learn how to read space. When I rang the gong, there was a sudden shift in the whole room. The space shifted. And that's what I want you to begin to pay attention to. If you're eating lunch and somebody drops a plate, crash! What happens right then to the space? Look at the space. Mahamudra is about developing the ability to actually look and see reality nakedly. And space is one of the first places we start, because strangely enough, it's one of the easiest. So anytime there's any shift, ask yourself, what's going on right now? When I ring the gong, what happens? And what happens is going to be different every single time. And it's going to affect everybody in the room. It's going to be an expression, actually, of everybody here. So we're learning how to pay attention to what actually happens in our life. If you know how to read space, everything you do in your life is going to be different, because you can walk into a meeting, you can feel the space, and you know. You know what the boundaries are, you know what the possibilities are, and you know what wants to happen. This is known as working with the underbelly of conventional reality. This is the hidden dimension of conventional reality, and it is what conventional reality is always reacting against. So to know the under girding reality, incredibly powerful. It's a secret. That's why the Vajrayana is secret, because you learn things about how to perceive the world that bring a tremendous amount of power, actually, to you. Because of this, there needs to be a real commitment to not use it for yourself. And we'll talk about that perhaps this afternoon. You know, we say that spirituality cannot be for one's own benefit. And it's not because somebody had that idea or because it's some kind of like moral thing to do. It's because the minute you start using spirituality for your own benefit, you are in deep shit trouble. Because you gain so much insight into how things work. You see people nakedly. You could easily manipulate the world, easily, for your own purposes. This is what Chogyam Trungpa called spiritual materialism, where we get a little spirituality and all of a sudden it becomes part of our, it enhances our ego thing. It builds up our ego, makes us more socially acceptable, makes us more powerful, and we can bandy about our tremendous accomplishment and impress other people. And that's not real spirituality. That's bogus spirituality, but you see it everywhere in the world today. The problem with it is, I mean, you might think, well, it's kind of innocuous, who cares? The problem is it's actually dangerous to the people who do it. It's like having too much power and not knowing what to do with it, and so you end up using it for yourself. So I don't want to freak everybody out, but at the same time, I want you to be respectful of what we're doing here. I'm giving you some tools and I'm giving you some teaching, and it is very, very powerful and very, very impactful. And if you're willing to do it for its own sake, it will free you. And if you try to use it to build your own ego up, it's going to turn into a big problem, actually. So I have to pass that message on to you. Which, by the way, Chogyam Trungpa's picture, he's over there, he delivered that very same instruction, but in a much heavier way. And maybe someday I'll tell you about that one. But maybe not. Okay, friends, thank you so much for this morning. It's lovely to meet you, and I think this is going to be very interesting, very, very interesting for me personally, and I think for everybody. We obviously have people here who are 100% here and ready to do business, and that's awesome. So thank you very, very much. So we're going to, at lunch, have a chance to connect with each other and talk. And then after lunch, we're starting into our silence. And I think it's been explained that we'll be sitting at our tables, was that of our group. And so there'll be a lot of connecting that happens in the silence. And I know in some retreats, the idea is eyes down, but here it's your choice. And eyes up is a lot more anxiety provoking. So if you're feeling a little shaky, you could do the eyes down. And if you're feeling exceptionally brave, you could actually look at people. Your choice, as always. Okay, so thank you very much.
More of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.